Okay, we're entering into Parshat Shlach. For the sake of time, we're going to have one shiur and one shiur only on Parshat Shlach. And we are going to focus primarily on the incredibly impactful, tragic moment in our history of Chet HaMeraglim. And this Parsha, perhaps more than any Parsha in the entire Torah, changes the condition of all of Klal Yisrael. In what way does this Parsha change the course of the history of Klal Yisrael? Does Chet HaMeraglim change the course of the history of Klal Yisrael? What's the local? There's a local answer and there's a global answer. What's the local answer? What happens as a result of Chet HaMeraglim? Yeah, Rebecca.
But they don't enter the land.
They don't enter the land, and instead, what do they have to do?
They have to travel a desert.
Travel a desert for 40 years. Meaning, seemingly, what was supposed to happen was that we left in the last Parsha, in Parshat Bahalotcha, we traveled to Parshat Shlach, and Parshat Shlach was assumably supposed to be Sefer Yehoshua, Perek Aleph. Mm-hmm. Right? We were supposed to enter the land, go in, conquer the land, and remain there for eternity. And that's not how it goes. So first of all, we don't enter Eretz Yisrael at this point. It causes a shift of generations. This generation will not be allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael. There are many Balei Hashkafa who go into this in very deep ways. And we'll touch on it at certain points along the way. But basically took what was supposed to be, what was inherently supposed to be, one generation that made a fluid movement from Eretz Mitzrayim into Eretz Yisrael, and we now gave rise to two independent generations with two independent identities. We now have the door of Yitziat Mitzrayim, the door Hamidbar, the generations of the desert, the generation that left Egypt, and a totally separate generation with a totally separate identity, which are the Dor Ba'ei Ha'aretz, the generation that enter into Eretz Yisrael. But seemingly that was not how it was supposed to go. And instead of it being this one movement of one generation and one people that goes from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael, there's those that came out of Mitzrayim and those that went to Eretz Yisrael, and that's going to impact how we look at the Sefer going forward, as we'll see over the course of the Shirim coming forward. In addition to that, we also give birth to the concept of wandering for 40 years in the desert. Because had they not sinned again, they would have walked right into Eretz Yisrael. And so the idea of 40 years wandering in the desert, that's because of Chet HaMeraglim. And in and of itself, the very fact that it cracks this generation in two and gives rise to the 40 years of traveling in the desert, that in and of itself would be incredibly significant. But it goes further than that. It goes further than that. What else happens as a result of Chet HaMeraglim? A lot of bad things. So let's go through the sources and get to Aliza's vague but totally true point. We often call it Chet HaMeraglim, and we look at it as the Meraglim, or the ones who sinned, meaning the 12 individuals went into Eretz Yisrael. They were supposed to bring back a report about the land. They come back out. 10 of them give a negative report. 2 of them fight back and say, no, the land is good, we should go in. Those 2 people being? Kalev and Yehoshua. They come back and they fight to talk about the goodness of the land. God gets angry. Those 10 are killed. And again, the generation is promised to be, the Jewish people aren't going to be wiped out, but that generation is promised that they will not go into Eretz Yisrael. And we look at it as those 10 people who sinned, but the sin goes much deeper than that. If you take a look inside, in your Chumashim, again, we have this source sheet, and I'll upload this version of the source sheet so we can all be on the same page. But you can look in your Chumashim as well. Source number 1, Bamidbar Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Excuse me, source number 2. Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Aleph. It says, Vatisa kol ha'ida, vayitnu et kolam, vayivku ha'am balayla hahu. that the whole nation raised up their voice, and they cried out on that night. And there's a tremendously deep significance to that cry. First of all, it means that the entire nation seemingly accepted the report, the negative report of the spies, the Lashon Hara of the spies. And as a whole, having accepted it, they cried out on that night. They wept about going into Eretz Yisrael. It's that cry that ends up giving birth to Tisha B'Av. If you take a look in source number 3, Masechet Ta'anit, Amar Rabba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, O Talayla Leil Tisha B'Av Haya. That night was the night of Tisha B'Av. Amar Lahem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to them, Atem Bechitem Bechiyash Al Chinam, you're going to cry a cry for free? That's what's happening here? That's what you're doing? I'm about to bring you to Eretz Yisrael and you're crying in your tents? I'll teach you what it means to cry. Va'ani kovea lachem b'chiya l'dorot. I will therefore establish for you on this night of Tisha B'Av, crying for all generations. Very powerful, very sad, very tragic Ma'amar Chazal. This means that the origins of Chorban Bayit Rishon and the origins of Chorban Bayit Sheni both trace themselves back to Chet HaMeraglim. To say it more strongly, the origins of Chorban in Klal Yisrael, in general, all trace themselves back to this night of Chet HaMeraglim. If we were to check deep down into the roots of Bayit Rishon and deep down into the roots of Bayit Sheni and their destructions, we would find the rotten root of Chet HaMeraglim. Begs the question, what's so deeply problematic about Chet HaMeraglim, about what happened on this night, that we pay such a price? We talked about dividing a generation in half. But what we're really seeing here is that what happened in Chet HaMeraglim cracks open the totality of Jewish history. It plants the seeds of Chorban. The destruction of Bayit Rishon, the destruction of Bayit Sheni, Tisha B'Av for every single generation can trace itself back to one moment in Klal Yisrael when we wept at Chet HaMeraglim. Now you want to tell me that this was a generation that was supposed to, in one fell swoop, leave Eretz Mitzrayim and go into Eretz Yisrael and understand that God took them out with great chesed and was going to give it to them and it was going to be amazing. And they totally missed the point. And because of that, they're punished. That they're not allowed to enter the land. And maybe you even want to tell me, worse, they're going to travel for 40 years and that whole generation is going to slowly die out and a new generation is going to come forth and go in. Maybe I'll accept that. But what's so intrinsically problematic in this moment, in this sin, that we've literally cracked open Jewish history? That all of Chorban goes back to this moment. It's an incredible thing to say. This Parsha is a turning point in Jewish history. In the last Parsha, we discussed it briefly, what will be 2 shiurim ago, right? We discussed it briefly 2 shiurim ago. That Miriam spoke Lashon Hara, and she paid a price. She got Tzara'at. Should she have gotten Tzara'at? I feel confident saying yes, because God gave it to her. Right? She got Tzara'at. There needs to be a response here. Chorban HaBayit. Tisha B'Av. What's really happening in the heart of Chet HaMeraglim, at this rotten root of Chet HaMeraglim? What's really the issue here that it seems to be able to crack open all of history? As we see, just to look at the source inside, to see it come out, we've already emphasized the point. But if you take a look at... Oh, no, we can skip that part. So we don't need to get into that. Let's keep focused on the issues at hand. Let's keep focusing on the issues at hand. So speaking of saying that Chetam Raglim produces Chorban Habayit, there's also then a Sefer of Tanakh that by default Chetam Raglim produces as well. What Sefer in Tanakh is therefore produced from Chetam Raglim? Megillat Echa. And by taking a look at Megillat Echa, we can see if there's something there that can help us understand what it is that went wrong at Chetam Meraglim. Now, when you look at Megillat Echa, something very interesting comes up. What's the structure of Megillat Echa? Is anybody familiar with how Megillat Echa is laid out? This is not like a deep, like chiastic structure, crazy literary question. Anybody familiar in a pshat level in terms of how Megillat Echa is laid out? It goes through the alphabet. The prakim go through the alphabet. The first pasuk starts with an aleph. Second pasuk starts with a bet. Next pasuk starts with a gimel. You see from source number 7, which is just again one example. No, it's not. I take that back. Source number 4. Echa yashva badad. Second pasuk bachot yivche balayla. Third pasuk galta yudah me'oni. Aleph, bet, gimel. But in a few of the prakim, doesn't exactly go down that way. And something happens. Let's take a look inside. No, so there it repeats it by threes, but it still does three of one letter, three of the next letter, three of the next letter, still working in the same structure. But if you take a look, for example, and it happens in a couple of prakim, in source number 5, from Eicha Perek Bet, follow along with me. Safku alecha kapayim, patsu alayich pihem, asa Hashem, ashas Hashem asher zamam, and sa'ak libam el adoshem. What happens to the structure? What switches? The order. Somehow, for some reason, despite the fact that the author did not have an issue with the alphabet, instead of following the alphabet, we go samich, pei, and then ayin. We swap the ayin and the pei. Now, that doesn't seem so striking at first, but let's think about it a little bit. When we say pei and we say ayin, what else does that mean other than a letter? Think about the word pei and ayin. What else is a pei and an ayin? Excellent. Which ones?
Mouth and
eye. The peh, which is the mouth, and the ayin, which is the eye. Ooh, now we're starting to get somewhere. Mm-hmm. Right? That seemingly something very specific is getting switched here. Seemingly the order of the alphabet is samech ayin peh, where the ayin comes before the peh, that somehow the eye comes before the mouth. But yet in the context of Megillat Echa, it's swapped, and the pei comes before the ayin. The mouth comes before the eye. Thinking out loud for a second, anybody have any ideas? What's the significance of the proper order of ayin, pei, eye, and then mouth, versus the order here of peh and then ayin? What's the natural order and what's the distorted order?
Yeah. I think it's because for us, you should really be seeing and thinking about what you see before you talk. And the Meraglim, they didn't take into account what they really saw. They just spoke and what they said was wrong.
Excellent. What are you going to say? Pretty much the same thing. You know who quotes you? Chazal. So let's take a look inside. Source number 6. Right? You guys were mechavin exactly to what Chazal say. Patsu alayich pihem, source number 6 from Sechet Sanhedrin. Amar Rava, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Vishvil mahigdim peh la'ayin. Why does it switch around the order of peh and ayin? Vishvil miraglim. Because of the miraglim, again, explicitly making that link between Megillat Echa, Tisha B'Av, and then back to Chet HaMiraglim. Vishvil miraglim, she'amru b'fihem, ma'shelo ra'u b'einehem. Because they said with their mouths that which they did not see with their eyes. So what does that mean? Taking what you said and drawing it out a little bit more. The way that we're supposed to go through reality is we're supposed to go and look and, as you said, critically think about reality. What am I seeing? What does it mean? And then after, like you said, I've processed what I've seen, I should be expressing the truth of that reality in the best way that I can to the world around me. That's the way that life is supposed to be lived. We take in with our eyes, we process, and we reflect and speak, MS. We reflect and speak truth of what we see, of what we experience. When you switch the peh with the ayin, the peh, that's my expression of who I am, of what I think, of my preconceived notions, of my thoughts, of my agendas. And the deep distortion of what went down with the Meraglim, Shehikdim Peh La'ayin, is that they took all of their, if you will, internal chatter, the internal voices that they had, their warped and broken perspectives, their warped and broken agendas, and they took that with them, and they went into Eretz Yisrael, and they superimposed onto Eretz Yisrael what they wanted to see, what they expected to see. They were makdim the peh to the ayin. They let their internal talk, their agendas define what they saw. And that was the beginning of the end. Now this claims that the perspective and the thoughts and the agenda of the Meraglim was warped and twisted and broken. Question is, what was the content of that warped, twisted, broken agenda? And whatever it was, seemingly needs to be shared by Klal Yisrael. Because they accept what the Meraglim say, they cry, and history breaks because all of Klal Yisrael sins in that moment. What was the content of the warped perspective of the Meraglim? Oddly, we don't get that in Parshat Shlach. Only when Moshe Rabbeinu comes back around in the Mishnah Torah and Sefer Devarim and retells us the story of Chet HaMeraglim do we see the depths of the broken perspective of the Meraglim and of that entire generation. Take a look inside. Before we get there, even before then. It's okay. We can all skip past that. We're doing a little bit of a quicker shear with the time that we have. Stay there. If you take a look inside. So in Parshat Devarim, the first Parsha of Sefer Devarim, Parshat Devarim, is where it recounts the story of Chet HaMeraglim. Let me do a little bit. What's the connection between Parshat Devarim and Tisha B'Av? Other than the fact that it repeats the story of Chet HaMeraglim, which going forward now you won't forget. It's always read, the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av. Shabbat Chazon is always Parshat Devarim. Why do we go out of our way to make sure that every single year that's the Parsha that we read right before Tisha B'Av? Because it retells Chet HaMeraglim. Because again, the two are inseparable. Every part of the cycle of the year overlaps onto each other. Devarim is always read on Shabbat Chazon, always read before Tisha B'Av. And there's even a hint to that in the text, both in the way that it's written and the way that it's read. The first time this word comes up in Chumash is in Parshat Devarim. What's that word? Say louder. Own it. Eicha. In Parshat Devarim is the first place it appears. That's source number 7. Devarim Perek Aleph Pasuk Yud Bet. And when it's read in Shul, it's read with the ta'am, with the incantation? No, that sounds wrong. With the cantillation. That's me. It's crossing over two events. With the cantillation of Eicha. We read it as Eicha salavadi tarchachem u'masachem u'rivchem. We read it like that, even in the middle of Kriyat Torah, hinting to the fact that somehow both Tisha B'Av is coming out of this Shabbat and out of this Parsha. And so we come back to Chet HaMeraglim. And Moshe Rabbeinu adds a layer here. I don't have an answer as to why it only appears here, but adds a layer here that we didn't see in Parshat Shlach. And it reads as follows. Source number 8. V'lo avitem la'alot. You refuse to go up after hearing what the spies had to say. V'tamru et pi Hashem Elokichem. And you rebelled against the words of Hashem your God. V'tiragnu bo'o lechem v'tomru. And in your tents you said, "Bisinat Hashem otanu, hotzianu me'eretz Mitzrayim, latit otanu biyad hamri lahashmidenu." Out of your hate for us, did you take us out of Egypt? Out of your hate for us, you took us out of Egypt. What a warped perspective! What a broken people! Can you imagine, Klal Yisrael, as an entire nation coming together and crying, not to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're crying because God hates us, and that's why He's taking us into Eretz Yisrael, in order to destroy us. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the broken perspective? And that's the perspective with which they walked into Eretz Yisrael to go and look at the land. This is the peh that was makdim the ayin. This is what the perspective that they had. There was no way for them to see the good of the land. They came in seeing hate. They came in with a worldview of hate. They imagined a God as being a God of hate. It's twice as painful. Because this generation was the generation that left Egypt. And every year we commemorate. And every year we celebrate Yitziat Mitzrayim. When do we celebrate Yitziat Mitzrayim? Pesach. What do we do on Pesach? What's Pesach all about? What are we doing on Pesach night? All night long. Telling stories at the Seder. But what are we doing at the Seder? What are the last two things that we have in the Seder? In the order of the Seder? Hallel, Nirtzah. We're just praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu all night. Seder night is a whole night. The whole goal of Seder night is to give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the love that He showed us on Pesach. On the holiday where the Megillah that we read, where the part of Tanakh that we read, what do we read on Pesach? Shir Shirim. A book of love. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, out of His kindness, out of pure chesed, took us out of Egypt, out of love, and the generation to experience that was this generation. That this generation somehow, and for those of you who have been with us since the beginning, the cracks in the system already began to show themselves in Parshat B'Shalach, when we started to complain, and in Parshat Ki Tisa, by Chet HaEgel, and on and on and on and on. And if you start to go back, or if you listen to them again in the next year, you could see the seeds there are planted, and there are linkages made in Chazal. That this is everything finally coming up and erupting about a warped perspective that they had from the very beginning. We talked all about perception by Chet HaEgel. That was what the Shir was about. Which makes sense. Because what date on the Jewish calendar does Chet HaEgel produce? Shvasar B'Tamuz, which starts something called the 3 weeks, which links Shvasar B'Tamuz to Tisha B'Av. Isn't that interesting? That over Chumash we see a process from Chet HaEgel that erupts in Chet HaMeraglim, and it's reflected in the cycle of the year through the process of taking us from Shvasar B'Tamuz to Tisha B'Av, and linked by the 3 weeks.
Also, it takes you all the way through Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, the Shavuot and Nechemta.
Yes, and next semester when we finally get to Devarim, we'll talk about the Shiva Din Nechemta. Next semester, we'll get there. Because it's all through Sefer Devarim. That's when it takes place. But in any event, how much could they have missed the point? How much there was bubbling under the surface? How much there was cracked and wrong and broken that was the perspective that they went in with? The Ramban, if you take a look in source number 9, it's one of the most widely quoted and one of the most well-known Rambans. It's the final Ramban in Parshat Bo. And it's quoted at many different times of the year for many different reasons. And it's a Ramban that I would highly recommend that you see the whole thing inside, not just the small little section that we have here on the sheet. Incredibly powerful Ramban. And the Ramban says, at the end of Parshat Bo, after Yitziat Mitzrayim, we're given the mitzvah of tefillin. So first, he talks about the nuances of the mitzvah of tefillin. And he notes the fact that the tefillin are zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim. And he asks a bigger question. Why are there so many mitzvot that are zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim? And he says, in that context, the kavanat kol ha-mitzvot, source number 9, the intention behind all of the mitzvot, shena'amin be'elokeinu, is that we should have a relationship of emuna, of faithfulness with our God. V'nodei lav shehu bera'anu, and to thank Him for creating us. V'hi kavanat ha-yitzira, the whole goal of creation itself. She'ein lanu ta'am achar b'yitzira rishna, there's no other reason for creation at all. V'ein kel elyon chafetz b'tachtonim milvad she'yida ha'adam v'yodeh le'lokav shebira'o. The whole purpose of creation is that we should be here and know that God created us and give thanks to Him, give hoda'a to God for creating us. To recognize that everything that we have is a gift from God. To recognize the chesed of Hashem, that Hashem is creating us out of love, out of creating us to give to us, guiding us out of that love, and to thank Him for all that He does for us. That's the whole goal of creation. And we, as the Jewish people who are meant to bring history to its fulfillment, we're that people who are given the mitzvot, who are given the Torah, to lead a whole life. What we're doing is we're singing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's praises. We're thanking Him. We're revealing Him in the world. We're revealing His goodness in the world. That's our goal. That's our job. And the generation that experienced Yitziat Mitzrayim, b'sinat Hashem otanu otzianu mi'eres Mitzrayim, 180 degrees the opposite. But if this is the worldview of that generation, how are we doing? No, we're not going to have... That's okay. We can go a little bit further. We're going to go a little bit over time, but that's okay. Those of you who need to head out, that's okay. We're going to go a little bit over time. Not of Midrashah, but of Chumash. This issue of having this warped perception and this warped perspective, and of seeing God as a God of hate, that's what breaks down Jewish history. And Jewish history can't be fixed until we fix that problem. And as an aside, that's something that many of us, at one point or another, do struggle with. Or we know people who do struggle with it. Where we struggle with, why would God do that to me? How could God do such a thing? Some of us are brought up in school systems where they give us an image of God, where God is this God of fire and brimstone, and He's standing there up there waiting to throw down thunderbolts at us, and nobody raises their hand and says, but that's pagan, right? That's not God. And whether through what we've assimilated from outside culture, or we've even, lo alino, been taught, some of us have this negative image of what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is. And it's something that we're still struggling with. And it's something where the ultimate tikkun has to come from. To dig deep down with all of our... It's part of the struggle of life. All of our issues with God. Because only by resolving those issues can we see the world for what it is and God for who He is, and not be makdim peh la'ayin, makdim ayin lepeh. See it first, see what really is, and then express it. That's what's going to bring about the ultimate tikkun. And if that's what we're struggling for over the course of human history, then in my mind, I always had in the back of my mind that it has to be, that has to go back all the way to the problems that were created not just by Chet HaMeraglim, but by Chet Adam HaRishon. If this is what cracked open history, if this is what reset the course of history, there has to be deeper roots to it than even that. And I suspect the following. Take a look with me inside. We just read it in last week's Parsha, Parshat Bereshit, when the Nachash comes over to Chava. Source number 11, Sefer Bereshit, Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph. V'anachash haya arum mikol chayat asadeh asher asa Hashem Elokim v'yomer al ha'isha af ki amar Elokim lo tochlu mikol itzagan. So he says to her, did God tell you you can't eat from any tree of the field? She responds, v'tomer ha'isha, she says, el anachash mipri itzagan nochel, we can eat from the trees of the garden. Umipri ha'itz asher betoch hagan amar Elokim lo tochlu mimenu v'lo tigubo pentemutun. And the tree that's in the middle of the field, in the middle of the garden, that's what God said that you can't eat from and you can't touch lest you die. But Yomer HaNachash El HaIsha, the Nachash said to the woman, Lomot Timutun, you won't die. Ki Yodea Elokim Biyom Ki Biyom Achalchem Mimenu, on the day that you eat from that tree, V'nifkechu Einechem, your eyes will open. V'yitzem Kelohim Yodei Tov Ra, and you will be like God. And you will know Tov and Ra. And it's very interesting, the way that it's framed. What does it mean? On that day, your eyes will open, and you'll be like God, you'll know good and evil. And so Rashi tries to add, to just give a little bit more content there. What is it actually trying to say? Read Rashi with me together in source number 12. Source number 13. It says, Kol oman sonei et b'nei umanuto. Every craftsman hates their fellow craftsman, right? If you have a business, and you have a hardware store, speaking of little craftsmen, you have a hardware store, and somebody a few blocks down owns another hardware store, there's going to be enmity between you and that other store, because they're stealing your business, because they're forcing you to up your game. Every craftsman has a little bit of an edge to the other craftsman who's in their neighborhood. Says Rashi, Min ha'etz achal uvarat ha'olam. Once you're able to eat from that tree, you'll also be able to create worlds like God. Implying what? That you too will be creators. And once you're creators, you'll be like God. And God doesn't want any competition. What image of God is being presented here to Chava? Worse, what's the word that's used? So it struck me when it says the word sone, the same exact word. A hateful God. A God who hates the other. And seemingly, from Rashi being brought out here, what's being brought out here, I think, is again this broken perspective of being makdim, the peh, to the ayin, literally the peh of the Nachash, to the ayin of the Isha, where she hears the words of the Nachash and it taints the way she sees the world. It taints the way she sees the tree. It taints her perspective of reality. And it's from a tainted perspective of seeing a God of hate that breaks reality all the way back in Gan Eden. And as the people who are meant to be matakin, or meant to fix that which went wrong at Gan Eden, we come to that crucial moment, and we too fall prey to this perspective of a hateful God, to the point where God says, you and I can't work together anymore. This isn't going to work. Klal Yisrael will always endure. There will always be a Klal Yisrael, God promises Moshe after he pleads on their behalf. There will always be a Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael will keep going on, they will endure. But this generation of Klal Yisrael, their perspective is too broken, their perspective is too far gone, it's over. And the only way that we can begin to repair, the only way we can begin to move forward, is for that generation to be wiped out, to go through a 40-year process. Why 40? We'll discuss it in Sefer Devarim, Parshat Devarim, in the first session in the spring. We'll talk about the number 40 and significance. But to go through this process of 40 years, which seems to allow for them to have a transformative experience and see things in a new light. And after 40 years with a new generation, then we can go forward. Then we can go forward. Yeah. Another question? No. Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
So if this generation is already broken in their way of thinking, why do they need to go through this process? Like, the new generation is just sort of going to have a new thought. Like, why do they need to go through the 4 years?
It takes 4 years for the new generation to rise. And become ready to go in. And also it takes 40 years for Klal Yisrael as a klal, not just to shift the people, but to shift the mentality. And again, the meaning behind that number 40. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to. Sefer Bamidbar opens up the system of Klal Yisrael to the uniqueness of the individual. And we keep coming back to that point because it's at the heart and soul of Bamidbar. It's how Bamidbar opens up with the counting of Bnei Yisrael, the Pikudim, giving each one their own status, raising each one up. Sefer Bamidbar opens up the system for individualism. And that's really good, because everybody has their own tafkid to fulfill. But on the flip side, we have to be very, very careful, because it also gives rise to the possibility for each person to come up and come forward with their own subjective worldview. And each and every one of us has to work to make sure that our worldview is God's worldview. That our worldview isn't tainted by warped perceptions, but that our worldview is designed by the truth of reality itself and a reflection of the one true, good, kind, chesed-oriented, tov God, desperately trying to lead us to a place of good. We'll wrap up with two last final points. First one is that we actually reference this and we go through this and engage the fact that this is the course of history every single week. We'll come back to this again soon. But in Kabbalat Shabbat, the way that it's structured is that there are six Mizmorei Tehillim. We start off with Lechuna Ranana. That's one. Then we have two, three, four, five, six. We interrupt with Lechadodi to welcome in the Shabbat. And then we have a seventh, which, as I just framed it, what does that imply? What are we going through every Kabbalat Shabbat? Each day of the week, we're going through creation. And somehow, and it takes investigating further, each one of those Mizmorei Tehillim is connected one of the days of the week and one of the days of creation. And obviously, Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbat, the seventh one, is connected Shabbat. That one's very glaring. The end of the first one is very odd, that we open up Kabbalat Shabbat with it. And it's something which troubled me for a long time until I heard my Rebbe give over, Avamos give over, that this is the meaning, one layer of meaning underneath it. How does that first Mizmor end? Think about the part where the chazan starts singing. Say louder. Arba'im shana akut bedor va'omar am to'ei levav heim. Right? 40 years you wandered in the desert and they were a generation who were wandering of heart. V'heim lo yadu dirachai. And they didn't know my ways. Asher nishpati ba'apimi va'ona menuchati. Where I swore that they would not come into my place of rest. Why would we start off Kabbalat Shabbat with that? What's the implication? Why do we start off Kabbalat Shabbat with that? Because the journey of history itself is to recognize that what was inherent in that mistake of the Dor HaMidbar, that's what causes us to go through the journey of history. And in order to get to the end of days, to Me'ein Olam Haba, to Shabbat, the ultimate Shabbat, that's what we have to fix. And so we even open up Kabbalat Shabbat, recognizing that that's the part of history that's broken. And we go through all of Kabbalat Shabbat, we go through all of the week, we go through all of history, working to fix this inherent problem inside of history, inside of each and every one of ourselves. We'll end with the end of the Parsha. If you take a look inside, in your Chumashim, how does the Parsha wrap up? What's at the end of the Parsha? Source sheets are where it's undermined the Chumashim. So take a look in the Chumashim. What comes at the very end of Parshat Shlach? Say again? Yes. The Mitzvah Tzitzit. Right? Obviously, if you want to fix Chet HaMeraglim, put on Tzitzit. Everybody is on. Is with me on that?
I can't fix it.
What?
I can't fix it.
Women always have a clearer perspective, are less twisted by their own agendas than men are. That perhaps is an aspect of it, and I say that tongue in cheek, but only sort of, kind of. If you take a look at the language used for Parshat Tzitzit, it makes a lot of sense why, both in practice, but also in principle, whether we wear them or not. Tzitzit, the essence of what they are, is relevant to all of us, and the messages certainly are. And listen to the Lashon, Perek Tetvav Pasuk Lamitet. Vaya lachem l'tzitzit, ri'item oto. Look at them. Which one's coming first?
Ayin.
The ayin. Ri'item oto. Uzechartem et kol mitzvot Hashem. Remember all the mitzvot Hashem. And what did we just say that all the mitzvot Hashem are about? Recognizing emuna, the tov Hashem, the hodah to Hashem. Vasitim otam, and do them. Because if not, what's going to happen next? What's the alternative? V'lo taturu acharei levavechem v'acharei nechem. If you will, don't go touring like the Meraglim did, in English or in Hebrew. Right? Latura ta'aretz. Don't go walking around and following your heart, which here is coming in place of the eyes, but saying, following your own agendas. Don't let your emotional world determine what you see, blind you from the truth of what's in front of you. Emotions are incredibly important. We've talked about that in previous shiurim as well. Not to undermine emotions, but one should never let their emotional state determine the way in which they see the world. We should choose to see the world a certain way and bring about those emotions within us that will express the truth of that reality. Lo tatur acharei levavechem v'acharei nechem, asher atem zonim achareihem. That's the message of tzitzit. A little bit of the message of tzitzit is that we're given a little bit of a tikkun at the end of the parsha to remind us to make sure to keep our subjective perspectives in check, to be very calculated, thoughtful, reflective, introspective about how we see the world and how we see God, and to make sure that we're relating to the truth of reality and not letting our perspectives taint the way we see the world. Chet HaMeraglim is the sin that cracked history. Chet HaMeraglim planted the seeds for Chorban Bayit Rishon, Chorban Bayit Sheni. It created Tisha B'Av, and we're still experiencing the reverberations of that until this day. And going back to Adam Rishon, we're experiencing the repercussions of negative perspectives, of seeing a God as a God of hate and not as a God of kindness and love until this day. We're going to see this travel with us throughout Sefer Bamidbar. We're going to have to watch this and keep it in check, because if this is the generation that failed, and this is the generation with the warped perspective, Bezrat Hashem, let's hope, we don't know, leave it on the edge of our seats. Right? Will another generation rise? And will we see them take on a different perspective? And similarly, for each and every single one of us, to take these concepts very seriously and to spend the time, I implore you, I know I say this all the time in different, anytime that the opportunity arises, I'll say it. Take the time to do a little bit every day, every week, every month. Don't just wait till Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, but Halavai, we even did it on just on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. To really think, find a place of solitude and silence and think and do the Hid Bodedut and the Hid Bonenut, the isolation and the contemplation. What is God? Who is God? How do I see God? In what way is God in my life? And is my perspective of God forged either simply by my childhood experiences and what I learned in kindergarten? Is it forged simply by my experiences and my emotional reactions to them? Or am I forcing myself every single day or every single week or every single month or at least every single year to grow in my understanding of who God is and what He wants and what my relationship is to Him and His relationship is to me? Because that's how we're going to bring tikkun. That's how we're going to be talking in the Korban Abayit, so we're going to be talking Tisha B'Av, that's so how we're going to be talking Chet HaMeraglim, that's how we're going to be talking Chet HaDam Rishon. And Bezrat Hashem, through shifting our own perspectives to seeing God for who He is, to living up to an incredible pasuk from, I think Yeshayahu, but I might be wrong, of Amzu Yatzar Tili Tilati Saperu. This nation, the Jewish people, I forged for me, says God. Amzu yatzar tili, I created them for me. For what purpose? Tilati saperu, to sing their, my praises. Not because God needs them, because we need them. To sing God's praises in this world and to recognize that this world is a world of love. God is a God of love. And everything that He's doing for us is for the good. And by doing that, we should see the building of the third base HaMikdash Meir Rabbi Aminim.